Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us on this Aloha Friday, May 17th, Hawaii Talks on the Conversation. Today on our show, we're featuring voices of our youth. We start with a couple of writers sharing how these young storytellers get their spark. And in this, the year of the forest bird, we revisit the story of a brave little soul, a brave little bird. French high school students are visiting our islands as part of a cultural exchange. We get the backstory. And you'll get to meet a Honolulu teen encouraging other girls to pursue careers in science, technology, engineering, and math. Plus, a young podcaster who turned 10 earlier this year, double digits, she's wondering what she will be when she grows up. Remember those days? The Conversation's Young Voices Hanaho show starts right after the headlines. You're tuned to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. The shaka is having more than a moment. This session, lawmakers passed a bill designated as the state symbol. All that's missing is a governor's signature to make it official. This week, a special screening of a film exploring the origins of the shaka took place at Kahala's Consolidated Theaters. In the audience was an enchanted Lake sixth grader who, by chance, wrote a story entitled Papa Says Shaka, that this month was released by Beach House Publishing. Here's Zoe Lay reading part of her story.
Okay, little Keiki. The seventh shaka is the jellyfish shaka. Make a shaka, turn it upside down, and move your thumb and pinky in and out slowly as your hand rises and falls like a jellyfish swimming through the ocean. Don't get stung. Oleana laughed because she had been stung by a jellyfish before and knew how it felt. And don't get pinched by the eighth shaka, the crab shaka. Make a shaka, turn it upside down, then put it on the ground and walk your fingers from side to side like a crab. The ninth shaka is called the boom shakalaka. I need your help with this. We both put up shakas and we fist bump our shakas and say, boom shakalaka. I do this when I catch a big opaka paka. Boom shakalaka opaka paka. Ha 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 ha. Oleana belly laughed. Time for the finale. The tenth shaka is called the ohana shaka. You get your whole family together in a circle. Everyone creates a shaka with their right and left hands. Then you connect your shaka pinky with your ohana shaka pinky. Everyone shakes their shakas and says, shake a little shaka. I know that one. We do this before we eat dinner after saying what we're thankful for, Oleana said. All those shakas are amazing, Papa. Mahalo nui loa for teaching me. Want to go teach Kaipo about the shakas? Papa smiled and said, of course. Shake a little shaka.
Earlier this week, Zoe Lay talked with us about how happy she is with the buzz about shaka becoming our state symbol.
I think it is very cool because the shaka in Hawaii is a lot of things. It's love, it's high, it's bi. So I think that now that we're passing the bill, it's going to be Hawaii's gesture.
Yes. You know, what a coincidence. I mean, you wrote this book, and we want to know, how did this all come about?
Well, my family from the mainland came, and we went on a boat, and one of the crew taught us a few of the shakas. So whenever we came back to our house, we decided to go around and make new shakas. So I was like, this could become a good book. So I grabbed my aunt's phone and just started writing in the notes app.
Wow. And so how long ago was this?
This was in the summer of 2020.
What was the process like of trying to put it in book form?
I honestly thought it would be a lot shorter of a process, but 2 years later, we're here now, and it's crazy that my book is now published. I sent it to the publisher, and then they wrote me back saying that they could do it or couldn't do it because it was displaying two stories. One was the relationship between the dad and daughter, and one was talking about the shakas. And then they found the illustrator, And after like a year, they wrote me back with some of the draft illustrations. And then around 6 months later, they emailed me saying that my book was being printed and the illustrations were done.
Talk about just the process of putting this book together. I mean, I don't know how many times you had to rewrite the story or, you know, what you had to tweak.
I wrote this book actually in one night, and then I wrote it again on my computer as a manuscript, and then I mailed that to the publisher, and a few months ago she made some changes because grammar and stuff like that.
Now, did your friends know that you were trying to put this book together?
They didn't figure out until just a few months ago. They were very, very shocked, and they were all, like, amazed on what I've done. And all my teachers were like, what?
And so, do you think you'll tackle another one?
I do, but it's a secret right now.
Okay, okay. So it's a work in progress.
Yes.
And so, gosh, will you get any credit for doing this book? You know, I mean, I don't know what your English teacher says.
Yeah, actually, I just did it for fun. I don't think it will become part of my grades because it was just for fun.
Did your school do anything special? I mean, like, how did you tell your teachers at your school that you did this book?
Well, since my librarian was getting me into, like, practice book readings, the teachers eventually started finding out. But some of them hadn't found out, so whenever they did, they were really shocked. They're like, why didn't you tell us?
So it was your little secret.
Yes.
So what's the plan for the summer? Will you be doing any more readings?
Yes, I will. I'm doing one on June 1st at Bookends in Kailua.
And then have you done one at your school?
I have, and we were doing it while it was being pre-ordered.
I see. Okay, so you gave people a little sneak preview.
Yes.
So what is it about books that you love so much?
I didn't get into reading books right before around fourth grade, and then I started reading a book series called Wings of Fire, which really got me into reading. And now I also read graphic novels. And when I was emailing a publisher, she was asking how we could, like, display the movement of the shakas. And I said, I read this graphic novel called The Babysitter's Club that had sign language in it, and they used arrows to display the movement of the hand signs.
So you really had input into designing what this book was ultimately going to look like.
Yes, kind of.
Well, what is it about this experience that you would like to share with other students who might have an idea that might make a good book?
I really want them to be, like, really family interactive with their family. So, like, do the shakas with their family and friends and stuff like that. And I think that if they want to write a book, maybe it's, like, kind of teaching them that it's not going to take just 2 months. It's going to take longer than they expected to.
Anything else you just want to share with us about this whole process and what shaka means to you?
I think it's really been fun to do these book readings and to meet new people that are interested in my book. And I really loved this process of, like, learning how to do this. So it was really fun.
Have a question. How did you select the book publisher? How did you go about finding out who to approach?
So Beach House Publishing, which was the publishing company I chose, have actually published a ton of the books that I read when I was a kid, like Gecko Surf and Aloha Zoo and stuff like that. And so we contacted them and they emailed us back and we met them.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And so I guess when you go to the bookstores and you see your book on the shelves there for sale, I mean, wow. What do you think?
It's going to be crazy, like, seeing my writing in bookstores and stuff.
Have you done, like, book signings?
I have. I did one at the shop.
The shop, okay.
In Kaimuki, mm-hmm. And then I'm going to do one at Bookends
at
on
Bookends.
June 1st.
All right. What time is that? Do you know?
Noon.
At noon. Okay. Is that, like, a Saturday?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to share about the process or about shaka becoming our state sign?
I think for, like, anyone else who wants to write a book, just, like, keep going. Don't quit. Never stop. And once you're done writing that one book, keep going.
Okay. All right. Well, we can't wait to see what you come up with next. That was Zoe Lay, who wrote a book, Papa Says Shaka, which is out this month. The young author is to do a reading at her neighborhood bookstore, Bookends, in Kailua on June 1st at noon. Today, we also hear from a young book author named Blake Lee. At the time we talked to him, he was an 11-year-old fifth grader at Punahou School. He's now in eighth grade. He penned a story entitled The Brave Little Bird. It's about how the habitat of a native bird is threatened by the rapid ohia death disease. Blake's mom, Anessa Lee, worked to get it published on Amazon. Part of the proceeds went to groups working to combat rapid ohia death. Here's how the story goes.
So the name of my book is The Brave Little Bird. It starts off, a sweet little bird named Petey lived on the island of Oahu. He was blessed with bright red feathers and a beautiful beak. Petey the honey creeper was such a loved little bird. Petey was also a fun, loving bird with lots of friends and family. He spent his days chasing other birds, hopping on trees, visiting his flower friends, and singing beautiful songs. Life was happy for Petey.
So will the story have a happy ending? Well, we reached back out to Blake and his mother, Nessa, to find out.
So I dedicated it to my teacher, Kumano Uhiba, and she was one of my first teachers that taught me about Hawaiian plants and animals, and she always pushed me to learn more about Hawaii, which inspired me to help the ohia. And something I will miss about her is her kindness and humor since she's going to retire this year. And so I decided to dedicate the book to her.
Well, that's really sweet. And this is a really sweet story. I mean, how is it that you decided to come up with this idea and turn this into a book?
Well, again, it started in third grade when I learned about native birds from my kumu. And the plants and native birds really intrigued me, and this eventually inspired me to learn and research more about birds and plants. And as I was researching, I started to realize how bad native birds and plants were being affected, which inspired me to want to find a cure for rapid ohia death or ROD and contribute to the community. Eventually, researching about ROD made me really interested in science. And they ended up writing a science paper for school. And my current teacher, Cheryl Dussel, encouraged me to publish my science paper. And so me and my mom didn't really know how to publish books yet. And so we started off with something simple, like a children's book.
And so, Nessa, jump in here. I mean, what was that like, doing the research to figure out how you bring this story to life in a book?
It was a steep learning curve. So we, you know, it was a lot of Googling. So Blakey and I just, it started off as a fun project for us. So we just found that on Amazon you can self-publish, but it was really tough. I mean, we tried to upload it and the pictures didn't match. It was kind of a disaster at first, but Blake worked really hard to try to make the illustrations fit the page, have the interiors match. You know, when you have two pages facing each other, it has to match and have a flow to it. And so, I mean, the trial and error, I did it. And if we sell two books, we'll be really happy. So it came out way better than we ever imagined. It was a really fun project to work with my son on.
And so, Blake, you know, you did all the illustrations too. And, you know, I've never seen a Eevee. And so, you know, was that, I don't know, was it hard for you to do the artwork as well?
The artwork wasn't that hard. I mean, I've never seen an Eevee before, but
I could just search it online and then apply it to the book.
Gosh, I don't know if you have any ohia in your garden. I had one, but it didn't do so well in my backyard.
Ours too.
Yeah, so we tried.
We tried to plant one, and then our yard man killed it. It was a very sore subject for me. But Blake used that plant to study it because, you know, he was very interested in trying to save the ohia. So he would take small little samples of our little ohia plant and study it until it died. But not at his hand.
Well, talk about how that you hope to share some of the proceeds of the sale of the book.
Okay, so I'm hoping to take part of the book proceeds and donate it to organizations that are helping to fight rod. It's not a lot of money, but it's a start. Also, if children in Hawaii are made aware of what's happening, they too can help in efforts to save the ohia and our birds.
Gosh, so this book just got published this month. I mean, it's just hot off the presses.
We just posted it on Facebook and at my workplace, and the response was, we were so surprised of the overwhelming response. And teacher friends were saying, you know, teachers really need books like this to show kindness, being aware about the environment, and with a local tone to it. So I think we were just really kind of taken aback at the support we received from our community.
So getting back to the question, will this story have a happy ending?
One day, Pili's father flew home looking concerned. "Tomorrow, we have to leave for Maui," he announced. "Well, what do you mean? We can't leave. All my friends are here. This isn't fair," cried Pili. Father looked at Pili with much sadness in his eyes. "Pili, look around you. Our home environment and climate has changed. Mosquitoes, rats, and mongoose are herding our fellow EEV friends and making them sick. A new enemy has made its way into our ecosystem. It's called rapid ohia death. It's destroying our ohia trees." The next morning, Pili's family left their home with heavy hearts. Tears flooded Pili's eyes as he turned back to see the devastation on his home, sweet home. "Goodbye," he squeaked, choking on tears. As they flew over the island, Pili decided to put up one last fight and call for help. Opening his beak wide, he wailed out a sad cry for others to hear. "I hope someone will hear our cry for help," Pili whispered as he and his family departed for Maui. Ellie the Elepaio heard Pili's cry. Ellie rounded up her gang. "Come on, everyone. You gotta stick together and help Pili." The Elepaios flew to the very tops of the trees and sang for help. Word spread through the island that the birds were in danger. The people started to notice the ohia tree suffering and the birds disappearing. Adults and children realized they stopped hearing the beautiful chirping of the EEV. "We have to do something." Scientists came to care for the trees. People posted signs. TV stations reported the arrival of rapid ohia death. Awareness spread around the island that the ohia and birds needed to be saved. The people on the island rallied together and started planting baby ohia trees while taking care of the existing trees. Little by little, tree by tree, the people worked together to save the ohia tree. Ellie and the Elepaios flew to Maui to visit Pili. They told Pili and his fellow birds the good news. "People have been trying to save the ohia. By sticking together, one day soon we can hopefully be together at home."
The end? Well, Blake leaves us with a hopeful ending. The real end is up to us. Oh, and we asked what his teacher, his kumu Maxine Nu'uhiba, thought of his book when he showed it to her. He said she cried. Mahalo, kumu, as this month we give a hanaho to teachers. And mahalo, Blake Lee, for sharing this story.
support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors, Bavarian Motor Experts, and Chaminade University.
Here in Hawaii, there's a special appreciation for things that are local. And we take that seriously at HPR, where 30% of the programs you hear are made in-house by our own team. Everything from Morning Cafe to The Conversation, Bridging the Gap to Evening Jazz. Whether you're a news junkie or a music lover, HPR's local programming keeps you rooted in our shared island community. Learn more about our shows at hawaiipublicradio.org.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're featuring stories of our youth in today's show. University Laboratory School sophomore Olive Taylor loves math. She's a member of the 2023 Million Girls Moonshot Flight Crew, a national team of young leaders who support and encourage girls to engage in STEM fields. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. The Conversation's Lillian Song sat down with the Honolulu teen to talk about her love of numbers.
Math started ever since I was young. I guess I've always found it as my favorite subject, my favorite, you know, interest. I think it had to do with sort of how infinite it was and how grounding math is. I love math. I think something about it is just how, you know, diverse it is and how deep it goes. So numbers has never been something I'm, like, stressed about or got overstimulated by, because I feel like that's a lot of people, that's what happens with math. It's just too much.
Right.
It's never been a problem for me, and I'm thankful because it's very beneficial for school.
Also very important in this journey, though, are teachers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they set that foundation. They're helping you understand these concepts of math.
Yeah.
So who are some teachers who have really made a difference?
I think a math teacher that was really, really inspirational for me was my seventh grade math teacher, Miss Conrad, who I had over COVID, which was when COVID year hit, we were all online. So she made math so much fun and so very, like, I don't know, she connected the dots so well for me through a computer, basically made the class a lot more fun. So she's always brought a passion out of me in math. When I was younger, I was put into sort of advanced class, which is math class, which is intimidating for a sixth grader. But she made it all the more enjoyable, and I really appreciate that because, I don't know, it striked my enjoyment for math now. Yeah. Other subjects like English and social studies always sort of mess with my brain because there's multiple right answers. And I guess with math, it's one, it's solid. With the foundation of math, I've been able to grow on that over these past few years, and it's just grown and grown to be more of my favorite subject.
So math always a part of your life. Numbers never scared you. In fact, you were always working toward that one answer.
Yeah.
Out there, and you're like a seeker. What was your aha moment that you knew you belonged in STEM? Can you share a story perhaps that will illustrate how STEM became your path?
Surprisingly, not really surprisingly for me, I guess, through TV. When I was younger, I loved watching TV. So the show Project MC Squared on Netflix is a show about girls who love STEM, and they focused on all four main components of STEM, including art, which is STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics. That show, I fell in love with it, and I fell in love with how diverse all the girls were and how all their interests were and how they came together. It's a show about spies and STEM and technology and how girls rule, and it's just something I fell in love with and watched the seasons over and over again, and I think that's when I knew that was something I wanted to do, and that was something I wanted to be a part of, seeing that movement within those girls who just love STEM and just wanted to make sure other girls knew about STEM, and I think that's what the show was all about, and I latched on. I joined. They got me.
They did. Can you tell me again? I've never heard of this project.
Project MC Squared.
So with Project MC Squared, what was the cast like?
So there was four, I think, or five main characters, and they each specialized in a different aspect of STEM. So one, her name was Adrienne. I remember her because she was my favorite. She was with culinary chemistry, and she was a culinary chemist, which focuses on the science behind food and the mix of food and science. And that really connected with me. I know I said I'm a big math person, but I'm also a big foodie. And I just love finding the science behind food. And that became like my little, journey in life or new idea in life to follow and figure out the science behind food. So I really resonated with that character, Adrian. There are other characters that focus on technology, and they focused on math, and they focused on engineering and melding and showing girls getting their hands dirty and getting their hands in the work and in STEM and making awesome things that you could just in awe by.
Hmm. So we're talking to you just as your winter break is getting underway. But I learned about you because you had a very full summer as a member of the Million Girls Moonshot flight crew.
Yep.
Okay, so break that down for me. Explain your job as a flight crew member.
Oh, yeah. So I was a part of the 2023 Million Girls Moonshot flight crew. And basically, it was a large group of girls from all over the world. We had girls from almost every single state in America. And we basically came together and shared ideas. We did a lot of Zoom calls together, and we were able to learn more about each other. But the big buildup was I did over the summer in Atlanta, Georgia, at Georgia Tech. We were able to come together, most of us, thankfully. We were able to come together and just be together because, you know, you're not able to see these people that you see across the screen. We got to see each other from all across the world, and it just went as far as, I don't know, states I've never even touched. And I got to learn so many stories about these amazing girls who had similar or such diverse interests, things I've never even heard about. They were so passionate about and having similar passions. And that I was able to do that this summer, and it was a really amazing experience.
Hmm. I also understand, though, that you are very creative artistically. You were painting like 4 hours a day on canvas. I'm so impressed.
Yeah, I love art. Over COVID, again, I painted every single day over summer. And I just paint for hours with acrylic paints and canvases. And I made my mom raid the stores and stock up so that I could fuel my little passion. But it was just something that was so relaxing and, I guess, relieving during that like stressful time for me. So, yeah, art was a very helpful outlet during that time.
Sounds like you're, you know, very mindful of, you know, your mental health as well. So to be able to have that release. And for COVID, what grade were you in then? Seventh grade?
Yeah, it hit sixth grade and I have seventh grade entirely online.
Okay. How are you incorporating STEM, STEAM, into your passions?
I think it helps knowing that STEM isn't everything. As I was younger, I would do a lot of coding programs. I'd do a lot of art programs. And I don't do as many of them now, being a lot busier as I've grown older. I still sort of apply those ideas into what I do now. So when I was younger and I would code and I would make websites and video games, I come home now and managing my computer is that much easier. Or, you know, learning how to, the science behind baking and why we use baking soda, I know that putting too much could make it, I don't know, explode. It's just so much helpful. It's very helpful and it allows me to see the world in such a deeper and more intimate level than I would have if not.
I see. Okay. So is baking one of your passions?
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
What is one of your favorite recipes or what do you like making?
Today I made banana nut muffins this morning, actually. But I like to make cookies. I also like to cook as well. I like to make like fried rice. I don't know. I just like being in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's also that understanding and knowing that, okay, there are proportions and when you're following a recipe, if you're a really good scientist, usually you excel at baking.
Yeah, it's such a science. It's so exact. Yeah.
So right now, as you have this time and space to talk about math, if there's somebody out there listening right now, what sort of advice or what would you like to tell them, you know, sharing your wisdoms with them right now?
I think I would just say to not be afraid to test the waters. There's so much things like I'm into cooking, I'm into baking, I'm into drawing, I'm into math, I'm into everything. And I would just tell that girl or that kid that there's so much for you and there's just so much that you don't even know about. So don't be afraid to jump into it. Just experience it because you don't know what is to come after it.
Okay. Well, on top of culinary science, you are also into landscape architecture and aerospace-based programs. Tell me more about that.
Landscape architecture, I feel like, is just a great combination of math and design and art and stuff like that. So the landscape part, I just like being outside. I also really like hiking and being in nature. So that's why landscape architecture is a career I'm very fond of. As for aerospace, I like to be up in the sky. I love to travel. I love to be on planes. And so I've always really been drawn towards flight and things like that, which is funny because of the flight crew. But yeah, so I also like those career paths as well. Those are all just very, they all resonate with me. And I know how diverse they are. They just, I don't know, they're all for me.
Wow. How do you stay grounded in school?
We have a math club at my school as well as a robotics program. So I'm in both of those, which is, it's very low key. It's not super competitive, which is helpful to nurture that enjoyment and not make it so serious. But yeah, I'm in those programs. I'm also in a lot of mental health programs and a lot of social programs with my friends. And I'm able to connect the whole school aspect with friends. And yeah, I'm a very social person. And I love being able to do those things and join those clubs and just jump right into it with my friends and my community and my school community. Yeah. So I do a lot of that type of stuff.
Okay. Well, before we go, any shout outs?
I'd like to thank my mom, my dad, my brothers, my grandma, all my friends, my school, University Laboratory School, and the flight crew. Yeah. All of them. They've just got me to where I am today, right here. Yeah. STEM rules the world.
That's University Laboratory School sophomore Olive Taylor talking with HBR's Lillian Song. Taylor is a 2023 Million Girls Moonshot Flight Crew member. It's a group initiative to encourage equity and to inspire 1 million more girls in STEM by 2025. Taylor has also participated in the University of Hawaii's Genius Day program because of her excellent aptitude for numbers.
Know just what you'll find. We can read the signs, daring by design. We get the picture when they're showing us a sketch. We're full steam ahead.
This year marks 80 years since a brave unit of Japanese American soldiers from Hawaii liberated a small French town called Bruere. And this past April, that town sent their young citizens to our islands to learn about the war ties that bind our sister cities. The Catholic school Jean du Arc sent 31 students and 5 teachers, and we caught up with them in Waimanalo on their last day. One of their hosts was Geraldine Hulk. Her father-in-law, Wilbert, was a member of the highly decorated 442nd Regimental Combat Team who fought the battle to liberate Bruere from the Germans. She's been to the hillside town many times and always returns with warm memories.
Oh, just beautiful. They have so much gratitude for the 442 soldiers who helped to liberate their town. And my husband's father, Wilbert, Sandy Hulk, he's a hero there. And so when we go there, they treat us so well. And we leave there with such a warm feeling. They have the aloha spirit in Bruere. And we just love being with them, and we have formed such beautiful relationships with many of the people.
Yeah, I mean, I have heard the stories when people go back for the commemoration, of D-Day and what that means. And when I was at Normandy, it was nice to see that someone came up to the group that was from Hawaii and said that on D-Day they placed flowers for a Waimanalo boy whose name is on the wall there. And you know, just to know that someone does that and takes the time to remember.
Yes. If you ever have the chance to visit Bruere, it's so beautiful, the street names that they have there. They named it after the 442, after Honolulu, after the liberation. Many places, they just love Hawaii and the people of Hawaii.
And so you wanted to, I guess, let them feel that love when these children came here.
Yes, we wanted to reciprocate what they do for us when we go there and show them the aloha spirit that we have here and make sure that they have the best experience. And when they leave here, they have that same feeling in their heart that we have when we leave there.
And, you know, this month we lost our last Arizona Memorial survivor. And I guess that really underscores the importance of keeping the stories alive of what happened that day and the experiences of war.
Yes, it is important to keep it alive. And what Jean d'Arc has done by bringing these children here to learn about the Hawaiian, Japanese, American soldiers that helped to liberate their town and learn about World War II so they can continue to respect and love and keep the legacy alive and it doesn't get lost.
Yeah. So these children here playing in the ocean, that they can do their part and strengthen the relationship that we have and make sure it doesn't fade away.
Exactly, exactly. And at the same time, have some fun in the sun. But I believe this has been an experience of a lifetime that they will never forget.
Geraldine Hoke says her father-in-law was instrumental in establishing the sister city relationship with Bruere, and the group met with Honolulu Mayor Rick Blangiardi as part of their trip. The students got to visit the National Cemetery of the Pacific at Punchbowl, as well as the USS Arizona Memorial, the USS Battleship Missouri Memorial, and the Pacific Aviation Museum. The French students spent months fundraising, selling cheese and wine. Many of them are interested in careers with the police and fire departments. They spent part of the day at the Waipahu Fire Station, where they met with three French-speaking firefighters. Teachers and students at Les Jardins Academy in Kailua hosted the group, learning about their shared history and practicing their French and English skills. Lucas P. is a sophomore from Bruere. He and Nora Dodson from Kailua bonded over podcasts. Dodson, a 10th grader from Les Jardins, created one called Wahine Wavemakers, which was just posted on Spotify.
It's been really cool being able to work with each other on like bettering our different languages. Like I work with him and we work up my French and then I correct him when he says a different word in English.
Yeah.
And that's also kind of cool because if it was a school from the United States, it wouldn't be the same. It's this international connection, which definitely goes in with our IB.
International Baccalaureate.
International Baccalaureate, yeah. Definitely coincides with that.
Okay, and so Lucas, what has this trip been like for you?
That's an amazing experience. That's my first time here, so yeah, I learned some things and that was cool to meet the students from here. And yeah, it was just an amazing trip. That was fun to be here and meet some people, and talking English, so I can work on better and
Well, what was it like going to the Arizona Memorial and those historic sites?
That was a memorial thing that I had to learn more about the history of what happened to Bruyere, because I wasn't knowing much that, and so now I know the history, what happened, an emotional thing, that was very emotional. I saw the film that they made, Go for Broke, everything was emotional and
Was there, a particular highlight on this trip?
Every time he goes to eat somewhere, he texts me a photo. He's like, oh my goodness, what is this? Tell me what it is, because they don't tell him.
Yeah.
Or because most of them don't speak good English, so it's hard for them, like chefs, to tell them what the food is. So I'm like, oh, that's Kahlua pig. And like, oh.
coming to a new place and experiencing new foods and just seeing sights that maybe you don't get to see there in your town. What was that like?
That was amazing because we can try some food that we don't know and some local food too, So that's more, how can I say that?
interesting.
No, that was interesting, Interesting to taste some new flavors and I try a lot.
Now, do you want to go to France?
I do. It's funny because in one of my podcast episodes, he listened to it. And in it, I said I wanted to go to France for a year if I had to live somewhere else. So
for a year.
It's on the bucket list for sure. Yeah. I think it's really important that our governments and our communities make connections. So the value of being able to communicate with someone from a different part of the world and to learn about the connections we have all around the world, it's really important. You know, we're all connected somehow, and this is just another way we are.
And so we bid the French students and teachers aloha and au revoir. But we can share that plans are underway for a Hawaii group to return to the town of Bruere in France for the 80th anniversary of the battle that binds us. Earlier this year, we told you about NPR's podcast challenge for middle and high schoolers. We wondered about what young ears were listening to out there, and we came across something we wanted to share with you. Does this song live in your memory bank?
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be,
what will be. Fate? Destiny? Well, 10-year-old Ava, too, wonders what she will be when she grows up, but she isn't leaving anything to chance. She started a podcast called Curious Careers. Episode 1 was about laymaking. A recent one was about a career that wasn't even invented when I was a kid, and that this is the new world of augmented reality. Take a listen to this clip from Episode 5 of Curious Careers.
What is augmented reality itself?
I'm going to tell you what I think, because that's a lot of people have a lot of interpretations of augmented reality. So I'll tell you how I understand it. Augmented reality is me seeing the world with my own eyes and having something literally augmented on top of it, meaning it's enhanced, right? So maybe I'm going to pretend my glasses are smarter than they actually are. They're not. So let's say I put a pair of glasses on, and now something about my glasses is helping make the real world even better for me. Maybe they're helping me see, like, the chair that's in front of me is actually much more interesting because there's a character sitting on my chair, right? Or it just makes the real world much more interactive, much more interesting in a ton of different ways. You could be playing games that are in your living room, like your characters are climbing up your furniture. Or you could be actually playing a lot of music that I'm using speakers in, and I could just hear it in different ways in my room. Maybe it's helping me see better. Just something as simple as that, right? I have, you know, really bad vision. Maybe I need to like hyper zoom on something, like I'm a superhero and I have powers and I can see far away. Like that type of thing would be augmented reality.
Instead of making things, enhancing the world, even though it's already cool.
Yeah. And just to give you the contrast, I know a lot of people know what virtual reality is. Virtual reality, you're actually not using your own eyes to see things in front of you. In this case, you'll see usually people put on a headset. And the headset might have cameras, but really it's all synthetic. It's all kind of created. So even the world in front of you isn't your real world. It's something that's been made for you to see a different way, either through cameras or through some other way. So virtual reality, you can play with faking the world a lot better. Whereas in AR, you're really leaving the real world alone, adding things on top of it.
Yeah, because sometimes I play on my dad's AR set, and it's not like fully set up, but I can sometimes in like the home room, the cameras come out in the world as like black and white. It's like the same room that I'm in, or I can be in this other complete room with like a lake and stuff. Yeah,
right.
I ran into a wall virtually.
Yeah, you gotta be careful of the walls.
We got a chance to talk to Ava and her mom, Sarah, too, about the Curious Careers podcast last week. Here's part of that conversation. Do you listen to a lot of podcasts? How did you get on this idea?
Well, it was mostly I think it would be neat to share other careers with other kids. And I was thinking maybe I could do a website where you tap on a link and it's like, oh, this job, you do this. And maybe a little bit of them talking. But then I thought it'd be a lot easier just to do a podcast. And maybe some of that inspiration came from some of the podcasts I listen to. And they're all kinds of maybe educational podcasts. Like The Moment of there's these kids who ask questions. And it's pretty fun. And then the host will answer it. And then there's Forever Ago, which is about history and different things. And I really, like, enjoy that. And then there's Brains On, and that's just more science and math and cool stuff like that.
Well, of the people that you've interviewed, I mean, you, like, list off, you know, the types of jobs that you've learned about.
Well, a lot of these I didn't really know about, which is really interesting. Like, I like the AR one and the and Wesley, the guy who studied the ocean. I never knew about that. I thought it was just a bunch of people who took photos in the ocean. Yeah, those are probably my top two.
And so, Mom, jump in here. Sarah, what have you seen as Ava's gotten more involved and interested in these different fields out there?
Oh, I think it's really fun to see my daughter be able to process what people do for a living and then give her own interpretation of how she absorbs what they do. So we do something for homeschooling called narration, where you tell back what you hear. And so what she collects after she hears about what a person does is just like from the brain of a child. It's just different how to interpret it. But I love that when people explain what they do as a career to a child, they try to make it even more simplified and in layman's terms. And there are times where I have to listen to the podcast three times and I'm still absorbing new things from it. But she's really collected a lot of different ideas in terms of what people do for a career and how do they get to that career. And then she hears about different facets of their life, like their hobbies. So those are things that I feel like sometimes people don't really share that when they're adults to other adults. But when you're with a child, there's less guards to put up in some ways. So that's been the fun adventure. And I've always loved hearing what people do because it's just everyone's just this walking science experiment and they're just fascinating to me. And so it's fun to see Ava take on that amazement and fascination with other people too. She usually comes up with the idea of who she wants to interview. So that's been fun.
Well, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I was a kid. I don't know. Did you?
I didn't, but I remember interviewing Nadine Cam from, I think it was mm-hmm. the Honolulu Advertiser, and she wrote back and told me more about her career, and that was in the fifth grade. But I wanted to be an architect. What did you want to be?
I wanted to go off and join the circus.
Oh. And they have circus classes in this area, so I'm curious yes. if you ever did anything towards that.
No, the furthest I got was, you know, enjoying Cirque du Soleil, but that's okay.
Oh, yeah. That is a high-powered circus.
Yeah. And so, Ava, gosh, as you learn about putting together a podcast, what's the hardest thing you think about doing this?
Thinking of questions, creative questions and good questions. Sometimes I just blank out, but it really helps if my interviewee send me like a quick bio so I can read through it and try to spit out some questions.
Doing the research and finding out what the field is all about and how best to get the information from the person you're interviewing. And what's the most fun part of putting a podcast together?
I love meeting all these new people and like their hobbies outside of work. For example, Mike Sego, he's now a stay-at-home dad, but he really likes to run, and he ran the New York Marathon, and I got to see some of his updates on how he ran with a friend, too.
And as far as editing a podcast, what have you learned about that process?
Well, I haven't gotten that like high up in the spectrum, but we've gotten a company to do all the editing, and it's turned out really well.
We found someone to help us go through, but the person doesn't really cut that much out of it. So it's basically just posting it and maybe taking out some filler words. But that's one of our goals this summer, is just really how to get into the granular technical aspects of the editing. So to be honest, we don't really do heavy editing on our interviews. So maybe they could be a little bit shorter and cleaned up. But that's one area I think that we both want to learn more about. I've tried it a little bit, but with teaching my four kids and running a household, I can't always get to it. So someone helps us post it up to Spotify, and that's about it.
You're homeschooling your children, and that's a lot of work. So I have to hand it to you that you've taken this on and that Ava has hit on something that she can really learn from.
I hope so. My hope is that they'll continue to always be curious and that they'll be pretty motivated in their learning and self-learning. It's been a good adventure. I'm only formally homeschooling two kids, and the other two are 3 and 5-year-olds, and they just come with us on our adventures, and they come in and out of our lessons. So we're still, every year is different, so we're always learning together. I'm getting multiple school experiences again, all over again.
Well, Ava, I don't know. Do you have an idea as to what you want to do when you grow up?
No. Sometimes, like, I have a lot of pen pals, and sometimes they'll ask what I want to be, and I have no idea.
Okay.
I just like to try different things and see if I like it or not.
Yeah, well, that's how you learn. That's how you learn. Anything else you just want to share about the process? And, I don't know, do your friends listen to the podcast?
Yeah, my pen pals and my Swiss friends will be like, I like your podcast. I'm like, wow, thank you.
And so when you come back here to Hawaii, then you seek out people to interview?
Sometimes, but it's a lot of vacation for me, and I get to be with my mom's family, which is fun.
Okay. Anything else, Mom, that you think would be helpful for other kids or parents or grandparents out there who might want to get their children into doing things just to help boost their creativity and their curiosity?
Oh, that's a good question. I would really grab hold onto the questions and the ideas that they have. I feel like they're walking idea inventors, and they're constantly thinking of ideas of things to create. For example, my son wants to assemble and organize people's Lego sets at their homes and be deployed and be like a consultant for them. And he's 7, and he also thinks that we should have like a business where you can take recycled plastic from the beaches. I mean, the beaches, that garbage that gets washed up and melted, and make Legos out of that. So I think they're always coming up with ideas for amazing projects, and often we forget about it. So I keep like a Google document of just their ideas, because at some point maybe we'll come back to that. And I have a mentor that says you will always have a lot of ideas, so put it in your idea box and pull it out when you have the time to do that. So I just hope that they know what it's like to start something and finish something.
Yeah.
And just, I get to have fun with them on the journey.
And then I'll give you the last word, Ava. Anything else you want to say just about podcasting and the curious careers that you've come across?
No, but it's a lot of fun, and just do what you want to do. It doesn't have to be podcasting. It can be whatever you do. Just dive deep into it and learn a lot.
Yeah, and have fun along the way, for sure.
Yeah.
That was 10-year-old Ava Tu and her mother, Sarah. Ava and her family live in the Bay Area, but come to Hawaii to visit her grandparents often. We enjoyed hearing from her, and we hope you did too. That's it for this Aloha Friday. Next week, the mystery behind the rejection rates for gun permits on the Big Island. Why are they so high? Reminder, our show is available as a podcast if you want to listen back to something. The Conversation is produced by Russell Subiono, Lillian Song, and Maddie Bender, with support from Savannah Harriman-Pope. Mahalo to John DeMello for the Backyard Quiz. Mahalo to Gypsy 808 for our theme music. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday and pick up The Conversation.